Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Dax, Cork, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors. First off, we have our science officer extraordinaire, Terry Farrell, Dax. We also have our pilot extraordinaire, Robert Duncan McNeil, a.k.a. Tom Paris. And myself, your forever ensign, Garrett Wong. For the complete version of this amazing version of this podcast, check out patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers and sign up today to become a patron for your extra awesome bonus material.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Terry. Hello, Robbie. Terry, what's been going on? What's happening with you?
Well, I went to Los Angeles to be interviewed for the Michael Westmore documentary.
Oh, how did that go?
Oh, it was so great to see
Was he there?
Oh,
you were together with him?
We were in his house. Awesome. I haven't seen him for a while. But you know what's so crazy is it's like with us. It's as if no time has gone by.
Yeah.
When you see each other, right? There's no skip. There's no, oh, I feel out of touch with you. No.
It feels natural. It's natural. Yeah. It's there.
He's such a warm, just down to earth. He's such a sweet man.
He is such a sweet man.
Did you get to know Mackenzie? You met her, right? At some point? Or no?
Me?
She was on
our show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm asking Terry.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
So funny is if I met her, it's when she was really young and we were first doing the show.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember meeting her as a woman.
Right. You know what I mean? I mean, when you guys started your show, she was super young.
And she reinvigorated the makeup line for
the family brand.
Yeah. I'm so happy she did.
She's a smart little cookie. But I'm glad you had a good time doing the documentary. That's really good.
It was so great. And we had Michael was there. Jonathan West
and our cameraman Chris was there.
I had such a huge crush on him when we were
who?
But
cameraman?
Chris. Yeah.
Chris.
Well,
I don't remember.
Which is
I'm trying to remember.
Tall, Jonathan handsome, West was blonde your DP. Hair.
I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris, the cameraman,
getting to see up close and personal.
The camera department was always the cool kids. Like, doesn't matter what show, camera is just the cool kids.
The cool kids.
Yeah. And then the grips are always like the troublemakers. And right?
Yeah.
Watch
They're
out
like
for the
kids kicking it in the alley, right?
Yeah.
Playing kick the can.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, Robbie. So who are the nerds then? Who are the nerds of the
We were the nerds.
The actors are the nerds.
We had to sleep and know our lines. Yeah, we were the nerds.
Oh my gosh. Terry, I just want to say one thing that I've noticed when I've been watching some of our episodes, some of our podcast episodes, is that your voice is so silky smooth.
Made for radio.
It really.
Oh my God! Thank you.
As I was listening and watching, I was like, "Wow! I've never ever told her this, but I'm gonna tell you this now. So now it's in public record. Everyone knows that I've complimented you.
The voice.
Sarah, thank you. That is such a nice thing for you to say.
Yes,
Terry,
I hope it makes your day.
It really means a lot to
Terry
me.
The voice Farrell. From now on, I'm gonna say like Robbie.
That's my
voice,
new career.
Where's the
voice?
Do you know where the voice is right now? You're like, oh, she's in Albuquerque. I know where the voice is.
The voice.
You know, I had to work on it, though. When I was modeling my first commercial, they got me a voice coach because my voice register was so super high.
Oh, it was higher.
Oh, I was so insecure and nervous. And just as a person.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild? Mm-hmm. So then my first commercial was Maybelline, but I kept Expert Eyes.
Expert Eyes.
I kept on with the voice lessons because I had this audition coming up for a show called Paper Dolls.
Right.
Oh,
and
sure.
So when I read for the TV movie version, which Daryl Hannah and Alexandra Paul did, I wasn't quite ready. So I stayed in acting class and I did my voice work. And
what would they do? Yeah. Do you remember in voice work? Or like, what would you do? Would you
it was so hard because I
reciting
I
things
well.
Or yeah,
singing.
Oh, singing voice work. Wow.
Yeah. To try to get my register lower. But then I think acting classes also happened to help too, to be speaking to the back of the room. And because the teacher knew that the series was going to come up for me to audition for, like, you know, when your agents and teachers are all in cahoots when you're young. So she was really hard on me about speaking to the back of the room. And I see in these shows, my voice is small.
It's more tentative.
Yeah, I'm
you
very
weren't the
nervous.
Voice yet. Now you're Terry the Voice Ferrell. Back then, you were
Well,
Terry
certainly
the timid.
In the first season, even in this 12th episode, I feel like my voice, I don't have my voice yet. I felt intimidated and small and like I didn't belong.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's interesting, isn't it? It's such a tell, people's voices.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you can tell. I know one time I was directing this pilot and we had a lot of actors come into audition. And one of the producers kept saying after the actors would come and go, they'd say, yeah, that actor just wasn't in their voice. Like they kept using that as a way to describe if someone was, you know, putting on an acting voice or something that was just...
Yeah.
She was like,
or just not grounded and confident,
not grounded, not strong, not authentic, that they were putting on a voice in some way.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of a drag.
A dramatic voice or a whatever. Yeah, I thought that's interesting. We got a couple birthdays to talk about. We have David Buck on February 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday, David.
Happy birthday,
David. We also have Matt Edmonds on February 26th. So happy birthday, Matt.
Happy birthday, Matt.
Yes.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you want to go even deeper into Voyager and/or Deep Space Nine, check us out at Patreon. We have tiers ranging from $3 to $260 a month. Fun perks, including all bonus segments, like our ratings of the episodes, winner and loser picks for the episodes, our ideas for a missing scene for each episode, and answering Patreon member submitted questions.
You can watch the video version of the podcast and see reaction clips from the hosts as they watch and react to the episodes in real time. Plus, you can participate in Patreon polls for the bonus segments.
We have guest interviews, monthly blooper reels, birthday shout outs on the podcast. You can even get autographs and cool swag mailed right to you.
Plus, we have monthly Zooms where you can join us and Armin or Terry for a relaxed discussion and Q&A. Go to www.patreon.com/thedeltaflyers/membership to check out what we have to offer and pick a tier.
Here we go with a limerick. I see Terry getting her notes ready.
She has some.
Terry the poet.
Look
Farrell.
Out.
No, I Terry the voice Farrell. Don't say poet. She already has one nickname.
She can be
you
more
throw
than
another
one
nickname
thing.
In there.
So okay. Much pressure. Yeah.
Okay, here's my limerick. Here go we ready. Go. A secret deal to buy an egg somehow goes wrong. And a twin is killed when the stranger's gun is drawn. But the stranger helps Odo with an escape plan that's so-so, but the changeling wants to know where he truly belongs.
I love that you put so-so. That's your limerick. Yeah, look at this. Look at the creativity that McNeil has here. Okay. Oh, my God. Okay. All right.
Coming in strong, Robbie.
Thank you. Kicking us off.
Here's my haiku for Vortex. All right, here we go. Croton's on the run. Akel wants death penalty. Odo has a heart.
Oh, yeah. Odo does have a heart.
Yeah, that's it.
He
you
does.
Know, in this that, episode. I think, is the first time I've heard you not make an actual joke out of the whole thing.
Me?
That was sincere. I know. Usually Garrett's right? Got like, he's trying to find the funny version.
I'm always usually trying to find the funny. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a serious
Well, maybe especially if you're last.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He always
and we both have been
finish.
Serious, and
yes.
Then,
yeah. Then I add the funniness. Okay. What do you
yeah,
have?
You can't help
Terry.
It.
Terry
the voice. Farrell.
Okay. Be kind. I'm not the writers. You guys are.
Okay. Okay.
I love it.
He is fragility, Mr. Black and White, confronting a false hope in a gray night. Lies, lies, lies to protect his only daughter. We see the truth and protect the father. He is stronger now, Mr. Gray. Black and white, hope is renewed to fight and unite.
Nice.
Oh, your poems good. Are very like symbolic and metaphor. Yeah. They're very poetic. Mm. Mine are just
good
like
job.
Little limericks,
good
bathroom
job.
Limericks. But yours
thank
are,
you. I have
yours are poetic.
Limericks. Look, yes. I looked it up online and then I thought, okay, what they said was too hard for me to do. So what I thought I'd do is write a story and not worry about it rhyming.
Good.
And what I did take from what they said about writing poetry is to talk about feelings and to try nice. To make them metaphors.
Oh,
so that's why I thought gray night.
Yes, black and white.
Yeah,
I like it.
Your poetry is more poetic than our poetry.
Yes,
you are the
yes,
most poetic
you actually
of all,
are.
Actually,
you're inspiring
so.
Me to learn something new.
And maybe it's you're going to inspire though. Us to be a little bit more poetic.
A little
too,
more serious
so.
And not
so
joking.
Like that. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. I don't mean you have to be more serious, but it always yeah. makes us all feel good to inspire others,
and
right?
To be creative. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This episode, Vortex, was written by Sam Rolfe. I want to comment on one thing.
There's no story by. It's just a written by. That's it.
Written by. Mm. Sam Rolfe was a friend of Gene Roddenberry's.
Oh.
Gene had produced a pilot he wrote, I think. And I looked this up. Sam Rolfe, he passed away in 1993. So right around the time he wrote this.
He passed away
probably that year.
So this was his last project that he wrote.
Oh, he probably wrote it in 92, probably. Which is when we were filming this. Yeah. Probably. Episode 12. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he was nominated for an Oscar in 1953 for his very first screenplay. It was a Western called Naked Spur, or The Naked Spur, nominated for an Oscar.
An Oscar.
I feel like we need to watch this now.
The Naked Spur.
The Naked Spur. It's kind of sharp.
Yeah. A couple other things about this episode. Rick Colby. Rick directed this episode. The one guest star I do want to mention is Cliff DeYoung, who plays Croton. Cliff DeYoung was actually in the running for Cisco.
What?
What?
Yes.
No.
That's so hard to imagine, isn't it?
Can you
I love his talent. I really love his talent, but I do not see him as Cisco.
As Cisco?
He He was considered for the role of Cisco for a while.
He's not
physically imposing
enough either.
No, mm-hmm. But in the beginning, Robbie, didn't Cliff's portrayal of Croden remind you of Brad Dourif's portrayal of Suder on Voyager in a way?
Yeah.
That's sort of like, you know, a little manic and a little, cool, just kind of cool. But also, like, you don't know. He's a mysterious, maybe he's going to kill you, maybe he won't kind of thing, right?
Well, here's the thing about Cliff DeYoung. Cliff DeYoung, and this totally makes sense to me, he started as a lead singer in a rock band called Clear Light. Oh. Doesn't that make sense?
Totally. He looks like he would have been a rock star. That
rocker
I get.
Hair.
Not the captain of the station, but a rock star. His whole physicality, too. He's very fluid.
Let's talk about Randy Oglesby. Randy Oglesby plays the really pissed off Akel in here. He's the one that wants Cliff dead. The twin brother
who survived.
Randy Oglesby also played in Counterpoint on Voyager. So he was on our show. Yes, he played one of. Do you remember in Counterpoint? These were the aliens that kind of came on our ship, and they were looking all around to try to find the telepathic aliens, because anyone with telepathic abilities were considered evil, right?
Well, certainly dangerous.
I don't want to be around a telepath. I don't want anybody to know what I'm thinking.
The pitch for Counterpoint is basically sort of a World War II. You know, they said Voyager is hiding the Jews from the Nazis, and this is what it was. And so the Jews were the telepaths. The Nazis were the Counterpoint aliens that came in there. That one guy that was kind of romancing Janeway at the same time. Very militaristic, if you remember that. Randy Oglesby is the lead telepath alien. So he played that.
Okay.
Of course, we have Max Gredenschik also as a guest star. Gordon Clapp. Kathleen Garrett. Kathleen Garrett, interesting enough, she plays the Vulcan, the Vulcan commander or captain towards the end.
Nice to see a Vulcan in this episode. Yes. That was nice.
She also played in Voyager, where she impersonated Janeway.
Oh, God, I remember that woman.
But not the one. No, 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 hold on. No, no, not the one that was. Not the con one. No, the one from the play. The one that the play, the remember there was
there was like an old Greek tragedy or something. Alana
Torres is stranded on the planet, Harry somewhere off on the planet somewhere in the Greek tragedy. She portrayed Janeway.
I just love that a lot of these actors moved around all the different shows.
Sure did.
Just like Armin was on TNG or,
they
you
sure
know.
Did. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, he was the first one.
The first
us,
Ferengi.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the first person cast for Deep Space.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. The other interesting fact about Kathleen Garrett is that she acted in Robert Beltran's production of Hamlet that he threw
Yes.
So it was what? Like, this is, you know, all these little connections here is cool. We also have Gordon Clapp and Leslie Engelberg as the other credited guest stars on there. So that's it for our guest stars. Yeah. We start out with a exterior shot of DS9 and then right into a scene with Quark and Odo in Quark's, and Odo comes in and orders his usual, which is nothing, which is funny. Odo brings up the the Mirador. See, he said Miradorn in the beginning, but it's actually Miradorn, right? There's a R in the end. It's Miradorn.
Is there? Some,
I thought so too. Yeah, it's Miradorn.
Because I remember thinking Michael Dorn. Dorn.
Right, that's what I said too. Right. Miradorn sounds so close to Michael Dorn. So let's just say Odo brings up the Michael Dorn ship that arrived recently, and he thinks that Quark is up to something and that he's in cahoots with the Michael Dorn. But the reality is that
the Miradorn.
No, but I'm doing it on purpose. I'm messing with him. Right? Odo also notices that another newcomer keeps avoiding his gaze. Quark looks over.
Who looks like a rock star.
Yes, he does.
Quark looks
over
at the
rock star. Yeah,
he was handsome.
Yeah.
Yes. Even with crazy makeup.
Exactly.
Now that's something.
The Miradorn twins that walk through.
They're the same actor.
What?
Right?
No.
No, I think that's what it says.
That's where the credit is. Akel is credited as that actor, and Rokel is credited as that actor as well.
Wow.
That's what it said, Robbie. I don't know if that's what I was going to ask you, how they did that. How did he cross him like that?
It was a special effect. Then they would have had to shoot him and then have him leave, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot empty and then shoot with himself in a different position and then crossing.
Wow. That seems so complicated.
It is. And it certainly was then because, you know, it was new.
Yeah. you guys can verify me on that one, but when I looked it up, it said Roquel Akel, played by Randy Oglesby.
I'm thinking that you're right, because I know how they did it with me.
That's what it says.
There you go.
On this right? spot.
They do it with me later.
Know. Okay.
And that's what I had to do. So, okay. Yeah.
There you go.
All right. All right. Okay. If you say okay. so, but I think it was a stuntman that had to take the shot and fall down. That's what I think.
Okay. All right.
Did he ever speak? Did his brother ever speak?
Well, 30 years ago, do you think I really remember?
Does any of us remember?
Did it?
I think when they come first.
But when they come into Quarks, when they walk through speak. Robbie, they both cross. They cross each other, though.
Yeah, but here's what I'm getting at. They
you're
both
saying that's
speak.
No problem.
That's yeah, you could do that. But they both speak in the.
I don't think they do.
They do. I'm looking at the script. They do.
Yeah, but
the script's off because
I think we should do a whole episode of this podcast about.
Did you hear what I said,
Randy Oglesby? What? What?
What'd you say?
That you shoot him in the twin number one, nothing, and then twin number two.
Of course, yeah,
they could do it. I'm not saying it's impossible.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
just seems. You guys simpler are just to cast a different actor and have it seems I don't know why they would cast.
You know why? Because they wanted identical twins, and it's probably not that easy to find ones that can act really well.
Exactly. So they cast the best actor for the role, and they just said we're going
to
use
and they
technology.
Wanted to be tall and good looking because it's our show.
Yeah, that so does make sense. Actually, maybe in the close up. He played both roles, and in the wide shots, they had
someone else dressed like him.
Close enough. I'm going to put money on that. There you go.
Because all also remember how fast it is you cast. You don't have that much time to cast.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's get back to the scene. Quark tells Odo that rock and roll Croden, who came from the Gamma Quadrant, is harmless, and that's when the two twin Michael Dorns arrive, and Odo makes more assumptions. Quark gets really frustrated and tells Odo, the freeloader, to either order a drink, play the tables, or get the heck out of Quark's. And that's when we see Quark kind of walk up to Rom and whisper
to Rom,
"Hey, prepare the special drink, which looks a lot like grapefruit juice." And I love the growl. The growl that Quark gives to Odo at the very end of that, after he whispers to Rom, he's like, "Ah," like he just does a funny little growl, which I did not expect.
And it's funny because Armin mentioned that when he was on Next Generation, he had this kind of Ferengi sound he did.
Right. So
and then he did it in the pilot of your show of DS9, but he said, "I never did it after that."
Well, he said he starts pulling it back is what he did.
Pulling it back,
I think this is the pulling of the pulling back and still a little bit of there, right? A little bit of that. But then there's a close up of Rom placing the carafe
and the
glasses. And then you're thinking, why is there so much emphasis on this scene? But then you realize later why.
Are you thinking that? Are you thinking like,
I wasn't.
Okay.
When I first watched it, I was like, that's weird. But then I was like, I know what's happening now. So Holosuite is the next location. That's where the secret meeting is. Quark is indeed meeting with the Myrodorn twins. And he says the buyer has backed out since the artifact has been deemed stolen goods.
This is a fancy egg. It looks like the
Fabergé egg. It's super expensive, and the twins are not happy. Okay,
but couldn't you tell? Like right when he was explaining, I'm like, oh, this is a double cross. I don't know what's going to happen. But he's really good at that lying. Where not everybody gets it.
Yeah. Yep. Double cross about to happen.
Yeah, but it's still so hard for me guys to watch Quark, knowing what I know about Armin as a person, as a human being, and to watch him be so diabolical and devious is like, oh dang it, that's so.
Yeah.
But then again, that shows how good such a good
him.
Actor.
Don't trust Armin.
Don't trust Armin. A good liar.
In the midst of this, this debate about whether they're stolen goods or not, rock and roll Croden shows up holding a Ferengi phaser and says, give me that. I want that now. And then a fight ensues. Everything goes crazy. Glasses get thrown and broken. And now we realize one of the glasses was Odo. Odo reforms into his humanoid self. And I love it how he disarms Croden and then quickly just gives an elbow to Akel, who was charging
very
at Frodo.
Strong, Odo. He's
just, yeah,
he's
just,
very,
just
I thought
wonderful.
The same thing.
I was like,
well,
man, you're like Renee Superman.
Was pretty strong anyway.
Was he?
Yeah,
okay.
He was a substantial guy. He did yoga every day, hiked all the
that.
Time. Yeah,
wow.
He was very fit.
Wow.
And tall.
Yeah, he's a tall guy.
Yeah, he wasn't scrawny. He was, you know, a man built like a solid guy.
Yeah.
Well, one of these twins is dead. So one of the twins. So now Randy Oglesby is only playing one role.
Yeah,
he's
only
no longer playing two roles.
Does he get billed? Did he get two paychecks for this? I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. Is it possible?
Maybe.
Okay.
I didn't when I played two of me.
See? Okay. So yes. So Roquel is dead. And Bashir comes in and arrives to confront. I love Bashir. Your team Bashir, Robbie. No lines from Bashir in this scene.
No.
Bashir looks up at Odo and just nods like he's dead. Gives the the nodding
shakes
confirmation.
His head, the old. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's not alive.
Too
old.
Late.
Yeah. Too late. Mm-hmm. We're in the security office. Akel tells Sisko that the twin Myrodorns are essentially one being and that he is now incomplete. And that
poor
he wants
guy.
Revenge and he wants Croden dead. Sisko tells him that they will deal with Croden in their own way and orders Akel to return to his ship and wait for possible further questioning. Mm-hmm. Akel does leave the office, but when he leaves, he kind of, as an actor, he chose to throw in this affectation like he was the Hunchback of Notre Dame, sort of like, I'm only half a man now. And he kind of like leaves in a weird ass way.
That's funny. It was a very dramatic walk out, but I didn't make the connection like he was injured in some way. I just thought it was a dramatic alien walk.
And I think, unfortunately, they didn't say.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't carry it throughout the performance. So there was that feeling of. But I didn't like
he did it for that one scene and that was it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if you're that compromised where you're because half of your being is gone, you better be hunchback for the rest of the show. But he wasn't.
Yes.
He was totally
okay. And that bothered me. And I couldn't tell if it was the writing or the directing, but it was just. Well,
We don't know what it was. It could have been Rick saying something. It could have been Randy saying like, I have to do something.
Also,
this could have been an early scene too. Shot at a different out of order, whatever. We don't know. So.
We don't, but here's the thing too. If it doesn't work and then you're painted in that corner and it's too late to reshoot, then it's just SOL.
Yeah, you are SOL at that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, I was thinking when he did that, I didn't know he gets shot. I thought it was just the other brother.
It looked like he was injured. Exactly.
I guess it ricocheted and hit him too, possibly. So
how did I miss that?
Quark and Rom are also, you know, they are also in the security office and they decide that it's time for them to leave. And that at Cisco's like, well, you can't really hold them. They're fine to go, right? But as they're leaving, Odo kind of says, curious that Croden was using a Ferengi phaser. And Armin immediately says, I'm saying his real name. Quark immediately says, you can find those anywhere. And then, also interesting that he knew about this meeting that you had to buy the Fabergé egg. And again, Quark shrugs it off and they leave. But we know something's up.
Well, he also says, you know, to Odo, as you were there, I argued that it might have been stolen.
That's right. He does say that. He goes
in his defense.
In his defense, he goes, I was saying it was a stolen goods. I wasn't going to take it. So,
but then you could also see how he was trying to just cover for his big fat lie.
Yes, most definitely.
And also, Rom in that scene, he gets really indignant and he says, "How dare you?"
Oh, does he stand up for him? Yeah,
he literally says. He admits it.
Yeah, he admits
it's like, shut up.
How dare you accuse my brother of doing something secretive like
double crossing?
Exactly. Because that
but
is exactly
nice
what it was.
But it's nice to see Rom because it's like he wasn't there at all. And then
I know
he snuck in and now he's in. Now he's in. Now his brother's there. So it's really nice to see Max.
Yeah.
It's nice to see Max. Like, this is the most that I think Max has done in the series so far. He's really, starting to become part of the team.
It's nice to see him, but it's tough to watch how harsh
it's painful.
It's painful. We are in the detention cell. Croden asks right off the bat, don't you feed your prisoners? He's hungry. Sisko tells Croden that there will be a trial to determine
he's got
guilt.
Food there. I was trying to figure out
no
what
food
the food
there was. No food there in that scene.
Oh, guaranteed. In the next scene?
Yeah, because he says to him, he was like, I'll tell you about where the changelings are if you tell me, if you give me some food.
Oh, that's right, because he gets the food later. That's right, he gets the food later.
He just doesn't finish it, so that's where, like...
Yeah, then you see what's
in there. It's like an empty plate.
Well, no, there's some stuff on it, though, right?
There was like a little oatmeal or something on it.
It's gross.
But in this scene, yeah.
There's nothing.
In this scene, it's all about his hairdo. He's got B. Arthur.
Yeah, and right away, I was thinking, why did they let him have his necklace? Don't they take all your stuff from you?
Yeah, isn't that like that could be used as a weapon or something?
But I watch a lot of TV.
Yeah, they take all your stuff.
They take your stuff from you.
They do. Sisko tells Corden that there will be a trial to determine his guilt or innocence and that he can be assigned an advocate or he can request one from his homeworld. Now, he immediately says, well, I don't think anyone's going to care for my homeworld at all. And I have no choice in doing what I had to do. It was kill or be killed. He points at Odo and says that if he had Odo's skills, he'd have no problems at all. And he refers to Odo as a changeling, which immediately gets Odo's attention because I don't think Odo's even heard this term.
No, this
before.
Is right?
Yeah.
This is
the very first time.
I got that impression too.
Yeah.
He's a shapeshifter, not a changeling.
And Odo asks if there are other shapeshifters in the Gamma Quadrant. Corden says that they haven't come through the wormhole yet. I mean, I'm assuming that they've already come through since I've seen you. And he says if he's fed, he'll tell Odo more about where he met the last shapeshifter that he met.
I like that when Odo accuses him of lying, he says, well, maybe I dissemble a little.
Yeah.
Because they talk about, he talks about dissembling.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe I dissemble. Lie is a very harsh word, but yeah. Dissemble.
Dissemble.
That's a great, I'm gonna use that. That's a good one.
He's very smooth.
Yeah, very smooth. We're in the commander's office. O'Brien, Dax, and Kira are in a discussion with Sisko about whether or not they should contact Croden's home planet. Sisko orders Kira to beef up security for Croden just in case Akel tries to exact vigilante justice.
One thing in this scene that's interesting, because I always get the scripts of the episodes and I look at, you know, compare it to what we're watching. Mm-hmm. This scene, the original script, Bashir was in this scene.
Yes, because
The
line that you have, that you have, Terry, that first line, it says O'Brien, it says, sorry, Bashir's name on that in the script. So either that
was sick, maybe,
or Robbie, that was incorrectly written by the fan that put this stuff out. This is not put out officially by CBS Paramount,
yeah,
right?
Maybe
the script.
Maybe.
So it could have been that he wrote it down incorrectly. But yeah, originally, I guess Bashir was in the scene if we go off of that. Yeah.
Sometimes that stuff happens. Maybe they would have had to force push his call.
Right.
And then they just gave me his lines and took him out of the scene. Yeah.
That could happen. Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Although Bashir wasn't in this episode that much. So I'm wondering, would he have gotten a force call? I doubt it, you know? So who knows? But,
I don't know. Yeah. You know what? I've gotten force calls where I sat
and didn't do a thing. Yeah. So maybe you're right.
And then you were feeling great until then you have a force call.
Then
and the next morning
call.
You have to do all the, you know.
And a force call, for everybody listening, a force call is when you finish one night and you don't have the full 12 hours to turn around and come back to work. So they're supposed to give you 12 hours or give the actors 12 hours. So if you wrap at 9 o'clock at night, you're not supposed to be back till 9 o'clock in the morning. But often they will shorten that time and they pay a small penalty for that. So. Yeah.
And a 9.5 hour turnaround is the shortest you can make it, but it doesn't count you driving back and forth, taking your makeup off or learning your lines. So my 9.5 hour turnarounds would be basically like an 8.5 hour turnaround.
Yeah.
So how could you possibly ever get enough sleep?
Get enough sleep. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We're in Quark's and Odo interrogates Quark about what he spoke to Croden about. He wants all the details. Their conversation is interrupted when Odo is hailed by one of his security staffers that Akel and his crew are standing outside of Odo's security office. So Odo says, let me handle it. I'll be right there to deal with Akel.
By the way, in this scene, Odo first names Morn. For the very first time, Morn has a name.
And I love it how he says, keep your mouth shut, Morn.
Big,
I love that. Yeah.
Big mouth shut,
which is hilarious because he never speaks to have that line, which is very funny. Yeah. All right. So we're now in the promenade outside the security office. Akel wants justice. Odo orders Akel and his motley crew to return to their ship. Did you notice that? None of the members of the Michael Dorn ship look like Michael Dorn people. Did you notice that? They were all
they didn't
completely...
have any makeup, really.
They were like, they had no money to put the same makeup on Randy Oglesby onto the crew. So they just made him this motley crew of random mercenary aliens.
Since they doubled Randy Oglesby as the twins, they should have made Randy Oglesby every member of the crew.
So
made like 20 of him.
Well, it is kind of remarkable because were they not a first contact species, or was it just Croden that was the first contact species?
Yeah, you're right. I think they both were.
I think they both were.
Yeah. Right. So that was, that's,
it just kind
of, there
blew,
are a couple of things that are kind of about this episode for me.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Me too.
Details.
Okay. Well, we are back in the detention cell and Croden has eaten.
This is where
Robbie, this is where this food is.
That's where. I was trying to figure out what's on the plate. At first, I thought it was a fried egg, but then later, he's
he
eating
dips
it.
Into it.
Yeah, he dips into it,
so
and
you're
it's
like, that's not a fried
cream
egg.
Of wheat, maybe oatmeal. I don't know.
It looked like fried gruel.
Egg. A gruel.
Gruel. Yes.
Gruel. That's a funny word,
isn't it?
This is a scene where he shows Odo this locket from the colony of the changeling,
and he opens up this locket, and we see there's a stone in one side of it, but that stone now takes shape. It forms into this shape and then it goes
morphs.
Back down. Yeah, it morphs and it returns to its inert state. And now Odo's attention is just, he's locked in on this. He's like, what? He has no, he's really, really shocked by this because he thought that, you know, this whole time that Croden was lying, right? So this is the first instance of Odo being like, wait a minute, you got me. That's not a parlor trick. That's a real deal. You know, I don't know what's happening, but I got to investigate further.
I think he's so smarmy, Croden, that even though, I'm sorry, but it looked like a key right away.
Yes,
to
it
me.
Did. Totally.
Right.
Like
so it
not
was
to,
like.
Not to me. I didn't know what it was. I was like, why is it doing that? Because it didn't. It was just like.
It just looked like a key to me. It like formed into a form.
You thought it was a key immediately. Both of you thought it was a key immediately.
Yeah, a circular key. And then it just disappeared.
You know what? Can I just say, Garrett?
Well, good for you.
That's just how our brains work.
All right, so you guys.
All
right, fine.
It's a detail that I found like.
Yes. So fine. Terfair and Romic can see keys. Gawa cannot see a key.
Gawa, all I'm saying is if it morphed into looking like him,
like
or
him or like a
Odo or whatever he was mirroring, then it would have been like, ooh.
Yeah. It should have morphed into the DS9 station. That would have been cool.
I also didn't trust him. I simply did not trust him. And it felt like it was, it just felt like he was seducing Odo.
Yes, it did.
To get
it felt,
his way.
It felt a little.
That's what he was doing.
And it's interesting you say that. He plays like seduction a lot as an actor, I guess. Maybe it was written that way.
He drew upon
but
his
later
rock star
on,
ways.
Maybe it's just the rock star, like,
that's what it
that's
was.
That's the intention. It's, that's the verb he was working, right? Was
He was doing his Jim Morrison. He was like, I'm going to get you into
which
my
Which I
got to
say
you know?
Later on when he opens up the stasis chamber, it creeped me out a little.
Like, yeah.
Oh, well, let's talk about that when we get to that.
We get there when we get there. But
we get there when we get there. But at this point, he is seducing Odo in my eyes. And I still don't trust him, even though, I went, wow. But I don't trust you. You still, you're still scary.
Exterior shot of the Rio Grande at Impulse. Now we're in the Rio Grande interior. Dax and Cisco have arrived. Here you are. You're in this scene.
Wait, can I say one more thing too?
Yes, go.
I love the exterior shots of the runabouts in this episode.
All
of them. It was so much fun to see it isolated in space. It just made it feel real to me. Like it felt like I was more... watching another world, getting to see it from that point of view.
Yeah,
most definitely. Well, you guys have arrived at planet, is it Rakkar or Rakkar? I wrote Rakkar too. Yeah, it's Rakkar.
Yeah, Rakkar.
Somehow I said Rakkar earlier. All right, so they are at planet Rakkar and they hail the Rakkar. Hadron, the exarch of the Nihilic province, responds. He wants Croden returned immediately. He is an enemy of the Rakkari people. And well, Cisco basically at the end of this conversation agrees that fine, we will return him within 52 hours. This is what's going to happen. Because the Rikarians are saying all of his crimes supersede anything that he's done on the station. So he needs to come to trial and face the music here on his home planet and not on the station.
At the very end of the scene, when Sisko says, expect him to return, we'll bring him back. Mm-hmm. And they sign off. I loved how this actor who plays Hadron or whatever, instead of like pushing a button to turn off his video, he did like a weird finger thing.
I didn't see that.
I was like, what is he doing? He just sort of like waved and did a finger thing. I don't know.
It was his way of doing clap on, clap off.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah, I liked it.
For those of you who are just listening and not watching Robbie doing that, he did this really weird flourish with his hand.
It looks like a magician's
like, yeah, it was very Alakazam, cool. Alakazam. Yeah, so... Yeah. Clearly, magic is a big part of the Rikari people as well. So.
He does birthday parties on the side.
Parties. That is, not only is he the exarch of that province, he also does children's birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. Magic is what he does. Okay.
That's Hadron.
We're in the infirmary. We have Bashir, and he's examining Croton's necklace. Mm-hmm. And he says, I have only seen one life form that even remotely resembles this. And it's Odo. So now, again, Odo's just transfixed on the screen.
One thing I'll say about this scene, it's the only scene that felt like classic Rick Colby direction to me. The way the shots were.
Interesting.
Yeah, this episode didn't feel like Rick was doing his typical stuff. Yeah, and I love Rick. I think his work is great.
Me too. Right?
But this one this one didn't feel that way to me. It felt like...
He could
except for
sick.
This scene, though. This scene was the one.
Except for this scene. This scene...
Talk about it. Like, what about this scene?
It's just the way it was staged. That it was, one shot, one person handed off to another. Mm-hmm. It was just staged in a way that was visually more dynamic, in my opinion, than the rest of the episode.
So all the blocking sort of kind of made the it made the eye move with the camera, basically.
Yes.
Right? It flowed, is what you're saying. Yeah. That's the typical
Rick like that
Colby
when
way.
That happens. I want to say one thing about this, though.
Yeah.
Not in terms of Rick, but in terms of the stone. When Bashir said, this could be a very distant cousin to you.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Then for me, that legitimized, that is something real I have to think about.
Mm-hmm. The Croton is the liar, but
it's a white liar.
No, I don't think he was a white liar, but I did think that, there could be, there's a little spark of hope that there was something to what he was saying.
Stepping back for a second, did you believe that Odo would be willing to compromise who he normally is as much as he did in this?
No.
Like, to me, I had a hard time buying that Odo was so motivated to find out about changelings that he would do all of that, make so many choices that just didn't seem in character to me.
No, it didn't to me either.
Yeah.
It bums me out about the episode because there were things I visually liked about it, but that kind of the gravitas of the character, especially the first season.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to just illustrate how badly he wanted to know where he came from, but I think they overstepped.
I think there could have been a better way to do that.
Yeah.
I think the need to know where you're from is strong. And I think it's fine.
It can
be played, definitely. But you guys both feel like it wasn't played the correct way in this episode.
In this episode, the way that they unfolded that idea, I didn't buy it.
Okay.
And it didn't even feel emotionally grounded. Like, if you're going to do an episode where a character is, oh my God, there's this thing about me that I never knew. I wanted to learn about it. Then do that story where it's an emotionally based story.
1,000%. Don't complicate it with the other storylines.
Yeah. I didn't buy his actions and choices as a character didn't seem consistent to me, even though I like the idea of like discovering where you come from. All of that is good. I just didn't think it was well done in this episode from a story standpoint.
Also, when he's in jail and when the force field came down, it was like, I felt nervous. Like it felt wrong. It was just, Yeah,
exactly. Stuff like that. Like he's taking the force field up and down and he's handing and he's taking.
That didn't bother me. That didn't bother me at all.
Then in the background, there should have at least been a sentry around the door.
No, Odo's Superman. Do you see him elbow that guy at the beginning and take him out? I don't have any problem. We're in the detention cell. Odo wants more answers about the stone in the necklace. Croydon says that there is a nebula called the, how do you pronounce it? Robbie?
Shamra Vortex?
Thank you. The Shamra Vortex with millions of asteroids. He found the stone on one of the asteroids. He says he can take Odo there. Odo says, you know what? Others must know how to get there. But Croydon says the vortex is uncharted. There's no maps about with this vortex. He came across this colony of changelings by chance, and only he knows how to get there and back.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Seems like a con man. Like, I don't buy it. Yes. I'm with you, Terry. I just don't buy, even though... Mm-hmm. You know, spoiler alert, it turns out that he is telling a lot of true things.
Then why didn't he just tell the truth?
Yeah. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Then we wouldn't have an episode. Yeah. Commander's office.
That's true.
Sisko tells Odo that he must escort Croydon back to Rakar to answer for his crimes. They talk about avoiding Akel, who has been scanning every vessel leaving DS9. So how can they get around this? We have a scene in the runabout interior where Odo enters preceded by a handcuffed Croydon. Croydon thinks Odo is taking him up on his offer, but Odo says, no, I'm just taking you back to Rakar. That's it. We jump back into ops. O'Brien, Sisko, and Kira are there. O'Brien notifies Sisko that the Rigelian freighter is ready to depart. Sisko says to signal Odo. We have a really cool exterior shot of this Rigelian freighter departing slowly from the station. And as it's kind of just about leaving the station, we see the runabout quickly maneuver under the freighter to sort of hide.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, the space shots were good in this episode. All the vortex gases and all that stuff. Yeah, there were some good.
Yeah, they were cool to see on stage when you'd see them do it. Did you guys ever walk by the stage? Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool.
I only saw that once when they were doing some ship shots, but it was very cool. And the models were really much bigger than I expected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The Mirrodorn do scan and they do not notice the runabout, which is what they wanted. So the runabout interior, we have a scene there with Croydon telling Odo what happened to his family. And evidently, this is the sad thing. Croydon has no idea what the charges were. He just knows that in the middle of the night, security officers came and basically killed his two wives. So now we know they are a culture that takes more than one wife. So it's that's interesting there. But both wives are killed, but he ends up killing the security officers for killing his wife. So we don't know what his
like the chickens
is.
He describes
it. He talks about it.
Sounds like a serial killer. You're right.
Yeah. He talks about this knife he only used to kill chickens and how easy it
was
cut
to
them
slit their throats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they set it up too for you to go,
yeah,
this sounds so far-fetched and creepy that I still don't believe him. The only thing going on his side right now is that crazy little stone around his neck.
Yes.
The keystone
cops. All right. We're in Quark's. Rom is thrown into the bar by Akel. He strong arms Quark into giving him information on Croydon's location. Quark says he doesn't know where Croydon is, but he can find out. And he tells Rom to give him the level 4 security chip. Now, Robbie, when he said that, I immediately assumed, Robbie, that he was going to pull out an isolinear chip like we use on Voyager.
Which is what we saw before.
Which is what we've seen before. But today, he picks out from it's a drawer full of vials of liquid. And he's like, this one looks like it's more full of liquid. I'll give that to Quark. Yeah. What
it
is that,
so
Robbie?
Inconsistent.
What?
Well, because remember earlier we talked to Armin about this. He had some secret chips. Where he,
yes,
had stolen and he used them to look something up. And, and Armin said to us, because I remember asking him, like, did you do that all the time? And he goes, no, we never did that. I think this is the only time. Well, they're doing it again.
Well, they'll do it again, too.
The props department evidently lost their bag of isolinear chips. Their chips,
so they're different things that he uses.
They're vials of liquid. Did you guys see that? There's liquid, right?
Yes,
they're not vials.
Which is
not
a
chip. It's not a chip.
No.
It shouldn't look like that. It should have looked like a piece of plexiglass, basically.
Or something. Yeah, it didn't look right from the way he described it. And also the fact that Quark can get into any security. Like, if he has access that way, why would he ever lose? Why would he ever feel at jeopardy about anything?
Yeah.
It's just not a good, it's bad.
I backtrack for 1 second since we're on the Cork thing? Okay.
Backtrack.
There is a scene with Cork and Odo where Odo really, kind of sticks it to Cork about what's going on. And Cork's like, I can't say anymore because you felt like there was something really in jeopardy for Cork. And at that moment in the show, in Cork's, when Odo confronts Cork.
That's the question, about, the interrogation.
Yeah, he's really interrogating him. Yeah. I felt like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't be so mad at Cork. Maybe there's another reason.
A reason.
Right. Yeah. But then nothing happens.
Right.
So then I thought, is that a red herring?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a red herring?
I wonder.
Is it the point where he goes, tell me if he talked about any aliens from the Gamma Quadrant? And he's like, no. And tell me about this. No. Like that point where you felt he's hiding something, right? The very end of that
he's hiding, but it seemed really like life-threatening to Cork.
Life and death. Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh, is his mom going to get murdered? Yeah. I mean, there's some.
Yeah. It felt like Cork must have a good reason that he's involved in all this.
But it wasn't. But, he was just hiding the fact that he was in cahoots with Croden. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Which is what we find out. But it was kind of, I felt duped.
Yeah. It felt a little, this whole episode felt inconsistent with character and even within the episode. The way they behave from one scene to the next. And I really don't like overall that Cork is so involved. I don't like overall that Cork is so involved in, this murder and this crime stuff. Like, it just is not good. Season 1.
And that's kind of dropped too. How important is that he got murdered.
He got murdered.
The guy was trying to steal the egg and he killed the guy.
Okay.
And Cork set all this up. Cork should be responsible for some of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
My question was, why wasn't Croden's Ferengi phaser on stun? Stun is just as good to knock somebody out. You don't have to kill somebody.
Yeah.
But again, we wouldn't have a story. We wouldn't have an episode if the guy didn't die.
So right.
I get it.
We could have taken an eye out.
Yeah.
That's my twin.
I can't see now. So as Akel is leaving the security office, he walks into the wall because his twin is missing one eye. Yeah, so it's like a Corsican twin.
He's the one that could see. I'm the one that can think.
He's the one that has vision. I'm the one that has a brain. Okay. And now I can't see. And he walks into the wall. That would have been awesome. Yeah. Okay. So the isolinear chip, a.k.a. vial of liquid, ends up giving them the coordinates, the flight plan, everything of the runabout. He knows where that runabout's going now. And he looks at Cork and threatens to come back and deal with Cork if the information is false. And he leaves. And that's the end of that scene.
At the very end, I think Rom and Cork share that they're worried that, maybe Croden's going to tell, this, his name
that
is.
That they were in cahoots on the plan and all that.
Yeah, but who cares?
Who cares at that point?
Like, who cares? Yeah, it just didn't matter. And there was no payoff later. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not in jeopardy for having this scam, this illegal sale, or that there was a murder because of their plan. They're never held accountable. That's the part that just seems weird to me.
Yeah. Really weird. And can we just talk logistics of how does he go from Quark's and get on his ship and get to the wormhole that fast?
Because the next scene in Ops,
can he teleport himself from Quark's to his ship?
If he has a site-to-site transport, yes, he could.
They did say that ship is very fast, didn't Cisco or somebody talk about
overtake? It would overtake.
They looped
a runabout.
It in because
probably. We go back to Ops, and one thing I noticed, Robbie, Ops being their bridge. They have much shorter scenes in Ops than we had in our bridge.
Oh, we spent so much time on our bridge.
Yeah, we called it bridge hell. And I look at DS9 Ops and I'm like, you guys are so lucky. Maybe it's just season 1, but it looks like like half a day in there or even a quarter, like the first setup of the day. It looks really quick. It does. Doesn't look like anything.
But you were there a lot?
A lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, obviously not every show, but it was huge. Yeah. It was hard to shoot everything really quickly in Ops was not real.
But imagine Terry, if you were on our show with Robbie and I on the bridge, every episode.
Yeah, we were always about 2 or 3 days on the bridge.
Yeah, so we're talking about 30 hours of shooting on the freaking bridge all the time, every
episode.
You're
so funny. You're talking to me like I had a 9-to-5 job during this time.
I know you didn't. I'm just saying.
I totally get it. But we had our own, you know, but you were also flying through space. I was living on the ship. I mean, the station, right? Sorry. You were living on a ship. We were living on a
station. You just called your station a ship. You were living on the ship. Okay.
It does fly, though, which I never knew about your show until
it
I watched
thrusters.
It has engines.
We had thrusters. We just moved to the wormhole.
It just moves slowly.
It moved very slowly. Yeah. And then we didn't. And then you never moved again.
You know anything about
it? No, they were in the runabouts all the time because we got to get out and go do things.
This is what I think of the DS9 station. It's akin to the restaurant in Atlanta at the top of the peach tree that just revolves slowly. That's about the speed of the DS9 station. Real slow. Yeah, there's not much.
Real slow.
Uh-huh. So they're trying to stop the Mirrodorn ship. It's powering up. They, you know, Akira's hailing them, you know, power down, return to the station. But of course, Akel doesn't care. It's a cool looking ship, though. I do like the design of that ship, the Mirrodorn ship.
Yeah, very cool.
I thought the makeup was genius as well.
No, the makeup on the Mirrodorn.
With the necklace and stuff.
Yeah, that was wild, wasn't it? Right through his skin.
It was a choker. Yeah. He had a choker on that went between his folds of skin on his neck.
Like earrings for your neck.
I thought he was a Frankenstein at first when I saw him. I was like, oh, they put a head on another body.
I thought he had gills.
I read something that Michael Westmore had designed flaps as part of the makeup, like gills or flaps or something.
Okay.
You said. Yeah. And then Bob Blackman wanted to put a necklace on him. And then Michael Westmore and Bob Blackman sort of got into it. Like, well, if you put a necklace on, it'll ruin my flaps. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, but I want to. So they decided to put it underneath the flaps.
The flaps.
And build it in. Yeah.
See, look at that.
So that's, but it was a weird.
But they worked together great all the time. Imagine how much they must have talked on the phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Once we were still working, they were at home talking on the phone.
About
the next aliens.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So Akel does not listen. He takes off. No. You see the wormhole open up, and now he's in pursuit of the runabout with Odo and Croton in it. We have a exterior space shot of that entire thing happening. The Mirrodorn ship leaving, entering the wormhole in pursuit of the runabout.
Croton is telling Odo all of these stories about the changelings. And in the middle of the stories, suddenly, and Odo's fascinated, by the way. He's just like, he can't get enough of tell me more.
Yeah.
And then the runabout is shot at by this Mirrodorn ship.
Yeah. But one important note, though, Robbie, is that at the very top of this scene, it's very important. Croton says to Odo, you're going to save some time if you go through the vortex, because he's trying to get to his daughter, right? Any way that he can. And we don't know that until later.
Yeah, it's a long way to go around it. You should cut through this vortex. That's and then he's like, aren't you curious about your people? And starts telling him these stories, trying to get him to go through the vortex. So then suddenly the Mirrodorn ship shoots at them. They want Croton. Odo refuses because now he's getting information about the changelings, or he thinks he's getting information.
Yeah.
Because Croton is a liar, Terry. He is lying. Like, yes, he's telling some true things, but like, this is an example of he's, as Garrett said, making up stuff just to try to get to his daughter, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And the Mirrodorn ship shoots at him. Croton says that he can, he could get them into the vortex and to safety if Odo will just let him have the controls. Odo agrees and unhandcuffs him and lets him take over the ship.
You didn't like that either, did you?
I did not like it.
You're like, you're gonna unhandcuff your prisoner and you're gonna let him drive your shuttle.
Oh, why don't you give him a phaser while you're at it?
Yeah.
I also like how aliens just like pop in and then they can fly anything that's going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
How many times have you been in a Starfleet runabout?
Yes.
Never.
Okay.
Croton takes him into the vortex. He lands this ship so the Mirrodorn can't track them. The discharge, he talks about the discharge from their thrusters. They'll be able to track us, so we should land on this this thing.
I like that shot, though. Did you like the shot of the actual shuttle on the asteroid?
Yeah, it was cool.
That was cool.
When they get hit, I lost this, when they get hit by one of the Mirrodorn shots, Odo says, computer, what was that? And the answer, as if he doesn't know that they just got shot. And the computer's answer is a temporary loss of stability resulting from the impact of a concentrated plasma charge. It's like the most. Why didn't the computer just say, power down, we've gotten hit or something? I don't know. It just felt
address
like
the plasma charge.
Oh, or you just took fire.
Just address.
Yeah.
Yes.
So funny.
It just made me laugh. The exchange with the computer, it felt like a joke.
Yeah. As the chief of security, doesn't he know what it feels like to get hit by someone else shooting at them? Think, he would know yes. that.
No, he's never been in combat before.
No. Croden says your computer's not going to outsmart them. And Odo responds with the line. He goes, I'm a security chief, not a combat pilot.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like classic original series.
Yeah.
I'm a doctor,
like,
not
or
a.
Or it's like Bob. Yeah. Yes. Bob Picardo saying, I'm a doctor, not a nightlight. Whatever he
yes,
does.
Oh, you wait, know, his consider little the funny writer. Little things. Yeah. Consider the writer.
That is a classic yes. Star Trek film.
And the writer is
line.
The classic Star Trek yes. writer. So there you go.
That's cool.
There you go.
Original series.
I like that.
We go down to the caves, the tunnels where they've landed this the shuttle. Croton's mm-hmm. leading Odo through these tunnels. And...
Well, he's not really leading. He's running through there.
Yeah.
And then
he's
Odo's running. Like, slow down. Yes. What are you doing?
Yes.
Yeah. Odo's not having it. He's not.
I did not think he was going to pop his head back around.
He came back. Odo grabs him.
Yeah.
And then like starts yelling at him, yeah. holding him against the rock, accusing him of, you know, using this, tricking him.
Yeah.
And Croden does it. Admit suddenly that this was all a lie. Yes, you're right.
You're right.
I was lying.
Right. Mm-hmm. He says, "What about the stone? What about the stone?" He's like, "It's Rikari merchants. They buy them from off-world traders. I don't know where yeah. they got it from." So he doesn't know anything
yeah.
about that at all.
Yeah.
No. But he does say it's a key.
Yes, this is a key, and he says it's a key to my only reason for living.
Yeah.
It's up ahead in that cavern. So we yeah. cut it up to the cavern. They come to this metal box. That has some big rocks that they have to move. Giant rocks. I
big
was like, Odo must really be strong.
I told you, he's Superman. Odo,
they did
rock.
A pretty good job of making it seem
of
heavier
it.
Than it was.
Right.
Yeah, selling
they
it.
Did.
I'm sure that was a styrofoam rock, but yeah.
Yes.
Good job. It looked
why
heavy.
Weren't they both on? Why weren't they both pushing from the same side? Would have felt
yeah,
more
they
realistic
kind of lifted
to me.
A 2-ton rock. Yeah.
Yeah, they lifted it and then it was really hard when it went over the edge.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they move these rocks off this metal box, and Croden says that it's a stasis chamber and his daughter is inside. So Odo helps him get the rocks off, and Croden uses that locket key to open it up and get his daughter out. And Croden introduces his daughter to Odo. You know, he tells his daughter he's a security officer, and his daughter is very scared.
Who did she remind you of, Robbie, from Voyager?
I don't know who.
The episode where you and I are trapped in the alien prison ship and we are basically accused of being terrorists. And the actual terrorists are the open sky terrorists. It was a brother and younger sister team that were together. And she reminded me of the younger sister team.
She was. Here's the thing about this actress. She was fine.
Yeah.
But Croden plays like this is his whole life. He gets her out and... There was something kind of creepy about it. Like she was too old to have all this physical like caressing and you
what?
Know what I mean? She felt like a 15, 18 year old young woman.
He can't hug his daughter? What do you mean?
I don't know why it felt creepy. It's something about it felt creepy to me.
I felt
a splash of what you're saying, Robbie.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if that's from my own.
Yeah. I don't know if it's my own personal reading into things, but it just felt a little like if it was a little child, like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old.
All right.
I could
so you're
that.
Saying they should have cast younger. They should
like,
have cast
yes,
single
I
digits.
I think so.
Single digits, not teenagers.
I think they it should have been a
I do
very,
too.
Very young. Yes.
Yeah.
6-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
You know, even like the hug when she first came out, that's like they're hugging for a long, long time. And
yeah.
I don't think that I wouldn't have had that reaction with my dad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I think also how that would read in a story because I'm so tall and my dad's short might be awkward. So I think
tall
it
is your
should
dad?
Have been younger. He's my stepdad. Well,
how tall is your stepdad? I mean, how tall is he?
He's probably 5'8".
Oh, so you tower over him. Okay.
Yeah. But it is kind of comical when people say, oh, I see where you got your blue eyes. Or I see, oh, you look just like your mom and dad. It's like, well, not really.
Not really. Yeah.
I'm not German at all.
All right.
But he does get his daughter out and is very happy to see her.
Not for the sins of the father, but don't you immediately see it, if everything else he says was a lie, because she's there, it's like a get out of jail free card.
In a way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because immediately
it's
we have a
pretty simple. Yeah. So suddenly the cave is shaking and rocks are falling in the middle of them explaining this. And suddenly a giant rock hits Odo and knocks him out cold.
That was a great stunt. That looks so good. Oh my God. Yeah. It was good. And you couldn't tell that it was not Renee and his stunt.
No, you could not.
That's why I was really impressed.
Overhead shot. Yeah.
Really good. Yeah.
Really good job. I liked it.
Yeah, that was good. He's knocked out.
Are you right away going, oh, he's going to run without Odo?
Yes. And he starts to.
No.
He starts to run.
But he starts to take him, and then he lets him go and starts to run, then comes back again. He does that, right?
No, so it's like, right when Odo got hit, I thought, oh.
He's done. He's out of there.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But then when he went back and got him, can I just say this, Robbie? I totally thought of you and how we discussed... The three of us discussed when you're knocked out, but you have to help walk out.
You can't. Yeah.
Because they did that to me, right? In Dax.
Because so it's too difficult to carry another human being.
You could not carry Renee like that.
No way.
And if he was knocked out, you'd have to throw him over your shoulder, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be like
the
fireman
man is 6'1". Yeah. He's like way taller than Cliff DeYoung. And at least twice his size physically.
Yeah, Cliff could not have carried him.
Cliff would have had to drag him out by his hands or whatever.
Yes,
that's the only way.
Or his feet.
And the daughter would have had to help drag too. In reality.
I hate when somebody's supposed to be unconscious and yet they're helping walk themselves out of a set.
And that's exactly what happened.
That's what happened.
Can't you just smash cut?
Yeah, he could have said, I'll carry him out. Let's go.
Go to put him over your shoulder and then cut you inside the runabout.
Yeah. Yes. But I love the first line in the runabout when Odo comes to consciousness. Croton says, "You're heavier than you look." Which dead weight is dead weight.
Or Croton could have said, "Hey, thanks for helping walk out of there when I was trying to, when you were unconscious." Said something like that. Thanks for the help.
Thanks for the assistance.
Yes.
Oh my God.
But Odin wakes up. Odo wakes up.
You said Odin.
I know.
The god,
I did.
The Norse god of. Okay, go ahead.
Maybe that's where the name came from.
Liminal.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. Odo wakes up in the runabout, but Croton has not been able to lose the Mirrodorn, and Odo wants them to go into the Tomer fields, hoping that the Mirrodorn will follow them. And Croton says, well, if they fire on them in there, the whole thing will ignite.
Right.
And Odo's counting on that. Mm-hmm. He wants to go inside. He shuts down the engines in there, and the Mirrodorn ship finds them and hails them, asks for Croton. Odo threatens to fire on them with all these superior Starfleet weapons. He brags about how powerful this little shuttle is, trying to put on a show there. But the Mirrodorn is not concerned about that. And Odo pilots the runabout just as the Mirrodorn ship fires. And there's this explosion, which Odo was counting on, that sort of shoots them out safely. Croton then asks Odo to look after his daughter, that he loves his daughter very much. That was his whole reason for living. And suddenly a Vulcan vessel is hailing them. And Odo tells them that that he's beamed over two people from a damaged vessel and asks if the Vulcans could give them transport to Vulcan and take care of them. Croton asks, how will Odo explain not returning him when he goes back to the station? And Odo says he'll say that Croton was killed by the Mirrodorns.
While they were on the asteroid.
There's also that repetitive use of, don't thank me, I already regret it, by both actors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Odo
yeah.
says it, and so does Croton in the beginning. So there's that little device being used.
But Croton does give him the locket in this scene, which I thought was very sweet. He gives he puts it over his neck and then steps back, and Croton takes his daughter's hand, and they're beamed over to the Vulcan ship. And Odo lays in a course for DS9, and before he takes off he says, home, where is it? Someday we'll know.
Cousin. That was sad to me.
It was very
sad. That part
sad.
Was really just sad. I just like, it was just wistful and sad and depressing at the end. But yeah, I mean, it leads to something else in the future. I'm sure we're going to see other shapeshifters at some point. So
I thought it was that it could have been, although this was discouraging, really the locket is still a little piece of hope, right? It's a little piece of a cousin. It's a little. Yeah. So for me, I didn't feel quite that bad.
It feels like the beginning of a journey for him. Like, hey, there's something I need to learn about. There's something I'm going to have to discover.
And trust your instincts.
Yeah, he calls it cousin, doesn't he? He says someday we'll know cousin. Yeah. And then engage. So a little bittersweet there at the end.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you want to go even deeper into Voyager and or Deep Space Nine, check us out at Patreon. We have tiers ranging from $3 to $260 a month. Fun perks, including all bonus segments, like our ratings of the episodes, winner and loser picks for the episodes, our ideas for a missing scene for each episode, and answering Patreon member submitted questions.
You can watch the video version of the podcast and see reaction clips from the hosts as they watch and react to the episodes in real time. Plus, you can participate in Patreon polls for the bonus segments.
We have guest interviews, monthly blooper reels, birthday shout-outs on the podcast. You can even get autographs and cool swag mailed right to you.
Plus, we have monthly Zooms where you can join us and Armin or Terry for a relaxed discussion and Q&A. Go to www.patreon.com/theDeltaFlyers/membership to check out what we have to offer and pick a tier.
For me, it's trust your instincts.
Trust your instincts. That's a good one.
Yeah, because Quark lied and it didn't feel truthful.
Yeah.
Trust that.
Yeah.
Croton, liar.
Mm-hmm. He's trust a liar. Your
instincts. I mean, maybe this is personal. I've had to learn to trust my instincts, but I really feel like I'm doing, I get it. And this episode really bothered me for how many times smart characters looked past.
Yes.
Their instincts would have been.
It seems so obvious as a viewer to see who was lying and why didn't the other characters see that? I just didn't buy it.
No, me neither.
Yeah. My theme moral lesson for this episode is that feeling connected to where we come from our home gives us all comfort. Seeing Odo have this beginning of this story of feeling a feeling of connection to a cousin, this little locket or home or his people, having a name to call himself, a changeling, that seemed like it gave him hope and comfort. I agree with you, Terry.
A little more agency.
Yeah. What about you, Garrett?
It's a little bit of both of yours. I would say family first for Robbie, and then trust your instincts. I'm gonna say that's my other one. I'm gonna agree with Terry 1,000% because your gut always knows.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us for Vortex. This was a lot of fun and confusion for me, but thank you for joining us. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stick around for your bonus material, and we will see you all next time. The next episode is Battle Line.